Hogstein.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a jam-packed episode of The Hogsty, THS. We have the full crew here. We are now 8 days away, I believe, from the start of the NFL draft. It's counting down quickly. Also means I have 8 days to find a good birthday gift for my wife, because the draft and my wife's birthday always seem to coincide. I should have married better in that regard.
I mean, can't you get her? I would maybe suggest, like, some kitchen utensils so she can cook for you more.
Yeah, that's maybe what I need, right? I need to eat more food.
Well, yeah, I mean, some cleaning products, perhaps.
I actually did get her something that you might even appreciate, Steve. My wife's a big Bowie fan, and okay. The Symphony is doing, like, a Bowie-themed concert in D.C., so I got her tickets to that.
I mean, if you like it, that's great. I'm not a huge fan of these turn rock and roll into symphonies things. And,
sure.
You know, there are some of them that are ridiculous. Like, I think the Scorpions did one. You know, that's dumb. You know, like, Def Leppard put an album out like this, but didn't play the songs live, just mixed in these symphony tracks.
Oh, that's weird. That's
weird.
Good.
I'm not a huge Bowie fan, personally. It's a bit too weird for me. But I would definitely...
It's not your style of rock. I know that.
Not really. But I would definitely rather listen to Bowie straight without, like, the London Philharmonic behind it. So I hope you like
problem
it.
Is,
but that's
problem
not
is he can't do that anymore. You know?
Well, because he's, you know, dead. But yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think I've ever heard a single rock song with the symphony like that behind it.
Well, like the one that started was Metallica. Metallica did it, and that was actually probably the best one I've ever heard. Well,
there was that whole era of music from the 90s, like when I was probably in middle school. You guys are obviously a little older, but like Smashing Pumpkins and all those guys, where they incorporated a lot of symphonies into their songs.
But but what I'm talking about is there was a Metallica album that
right.
was called like Symphony something, and they played a bunch of Metallica songs with an entire symphony behind them on a stage live.
Right.
And you know, I think they did that for one, didn't they? Did
yes.
they do one? Yes. I heard that one.
That might have been the single off that album.
Yeah.
That was actually
right.
I've never heard another one that I thought would I'd rather listen to.
It's more like they're doing their own cover with a symphony behind them.
Like, my rule generally is anything that dilutes the power of the electric guitar is not worthwhile.
Understandable. It is arguably the greatest instrument ever invented.
Not arguably.
I would put the piano up there, in terms of importance.
No. Electric guitar or bust.
I don't know. The electric violin's a pretty bad machine.
Is there such thing as an electric
violin?
Yes,
there is.
Yes, I saw it on America's Got Talent 2 years ago. He was actually very good.
There's also a guy who, and I'm surprised you've not seen this, Steve, there's a guy who built an electric violin out of a baseball bat, and for a couple years he was just going around to every ballpark playing the national anthem on that thing.
I don't remember that. That's interesting. I don't remember seeing him at all.
Yeah. I saw him in D.C. twice, and from what I understand, he just made the circuit, you know? You know what I'm talking about. There's
guys who
make those circuits. So that's – I'm surprised you never saw that. But regardless.
I got to clarify what you bought tickets to, because Bowie is dead. So it's
right.
a symphony playing Bowie songs. Is that what
it
is?
Something like that. Yeah.
It's
She's
not
going
like
with her girlfriends. I'm not even going.
Oh yeah. Okay. That's a little better. So, because I mean, you know, we'd have to, you know, downgrade your manhood for something like that. But
well, she's a huge Bowie fan. Her best friends are all huge Bowie fans. I'm let them do it.
But I can
enjoy the music. It's fine, but.
But there's not a guy up there who's impersonating Bowie.
I don't think so.
It's just the symphony. Okay.
Now, there might be people in the symphony with little lightning bolts painted on their faces or something ridiculous. I don't know.
Hey, I mean, there's been stranger things. I worked a Pink Floyd laser light show once.
Sure.
And it was not that weird. Well, no, but it was this huge, massive production. It was really just two guys with a bunch of smoke machines and lasers, and I remember I had
those
to drive
smoke machines, Steve. That was just weed.
No, they were smoke machines. I set them up, and I had to take him to like the grocery store to buy like something for his you know, it was like, this is a real shanty operation, but it looked super cool, you know?
Yeah. Yes. Laser light shows usually do look super cool.
But it was really just like two lasers doing all these things, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's funny getting the laser lights. I just saw something on YouTube. Apparently, there was a pilot that continued having issues with laser pens, I guess, or whatever, from the ground being flashed up through the window. So he had his phone one day to capture one time, and mm-hmm. he did. And it was a green light coming right. He had his flight manual up against the window, and everything goes like shining right into. Those things are actually very, very dangerous when you put them up in the sky, obviously, but it's just, but he captured that on video, man. That was just crazy. Imagine being on a plane like that, and all of a sudden the pilot gets blinded because somebody wants to flash a laser light up at it.
Well, yeah, speaking as a licensed pilot, I can tell you that would be terrible.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm also, at the same time, amazed somebody would have the accuracy to even remotely hit a plane with a laser.
Well, I didn't say what AGL he was at, either.
No, that's true.
I mean, Dave didn't say, I assume it didn't say whatever you saw that story.
No, yeah.
I mean, if it was over a rural area, it could be 500 feet HEL and, you know, be,
right.
You know.
True. But
he didn't seem
I'm assuming
that,
like
he,
high.
No, he didn't seem like he was like 30,000 feet up or anything like that.
Okay. No.
We've gone from.
It was like one of those things. He was probably, I think, like just leaving the airport coming up, and he was on his takeoff like that. I think of what it was.
We've gone from Bowie to lasers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is not that weird because Bowie loved his little space lasers. You know, that was his thing.
Yeah, that is true. Bowie's a weird dude, man.
Yeah, yeah. He had some wild songs, that's for sure.
He had some wild nights, too.
Yes. Oh, yes, he did. He and Freddie Mercury together, apparently.
Oh, so, my God.
Yeah. All right, let's refocus. We'll talk about the most important story in Washington. It's not the Caps making the playoffs. It's not the Nationals somehow beating the Dodgers. It is that the Commanders hired Dave Gardy as the senior VP of football initiatives, which is a weird title.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
Somebody like to explain that to me?
It seems like this is now. First off, let's get into his background. He was in the NFL front office for 21 years in a couple different roles. But what they're bringing him in to do, it sounds like, is he's going to help the coaching staff with, like, doing all their background work, all their prep work for game planning and stuff like that. It's one of those hires where he's not a coach. It's a front office role of helping the coaches and helping plan things out.
I don't know, just strange. You know, okay, hire whoever you want. But it's just weird. I've never heard that kind of title before or that kind of role.
What people seem to be praising this a lot. One, because for NFL insider types, this guy is a very well-respected individual.
He's the bee's knees, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it's that kind of thing where you hire somebody who's very inside to be your very inside guy. Now to help you out with the league and the thing I wonder about with a hire like this, we all know Washington kind of has a bad reputation from previous ownership.
They kind of have the world's worst reputation coming from previous ownership.
And I wonder if a hire like this, who's the guy that they hired from the NFL front office a few years ago to basically be their vice president of football ops, and then they fired him the same year because he
La Famina.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this is like another La Famina move, like help you with your internal PR, that kind of thing.
I could be. It just seems weird. Football initiatives. Like somebody define that for me.
Yeah, it's a very weird title.
Yeah. I mean, I'm available. If you want to make up titles for corporate officers, I'm available. You know.
Well, unfortunately, Steve, the job that they wanted that you would have been perfect for, they kind of already hired somebody else for this. And that was they hired a longtime Senate aide and, you know, political operative to help them get the bill through the Senate so that they can, you know, get D.C. the land and get the RFK Stadium going.
I'm not a lobbyist. I could do the deal for them. I'm not a lobbyist. I can't
That's
lobby.
True.
I'm not good at that.
That's true. I would be the better lobbyist, sadly.
I would make it known that I hate everybody, and that
right.
wouldn't, you know, work. So.
Well, see,
I'd be the anti-lobbyist.
Washington, everyone already hates everybody. So
I'd be the anti-lobbyist, though. It would never go well.
Yeah, so they hired a guy named Hans Nichols for that job.
Hans Gruber.
Yeah.
They hired Hans Gruber to build a big building.
Well, and then Hans Gruber falls down the big building. That's
yeah, but he tries to blow it up. I mean, perhaps they need he needs a new name.
Yes, yes. I don't trust guys named Hans. There's two Hanses we know of, Hans Gruber and Hans from Hans and Franz. Neither
Hans Solo. I like Hans
Actually,
Solo.
Actually, I have to correct that real quick. The Hans Nichols of Axios.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right.
Yes, yeah. It was actually
Curtin Mehta.
Curtin Mehta, whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce that.
And he was part of the chief of staff for Senator John Hickenlooper. Hickenlooper, yes. I love that name. And he was a Democrat out in Colorado.
Well, that's no good. I like Hans better. It's a more fun name to make
fun
of.
Yeah, sorry. I read the name of the guy writing the article, not the name of the...
They did that whole, diehard thing, and
we'll scratch that. Cut that. Cut that out. Actually, we might if this... Because we're going to talk quarterbacks. This show might go long, folks.
We'll see. Yeah, don't cut out my nonsense.
Another hire that they had made, though?
What's that?
You mentioned they'd hired one other guy that we didn't...
That was the one that I was getting ready to talk about, that one.
Oh, okay. All right.
That was the one that I pulled up, and yes.
Yep. I read the wrong thing. Dave corrected me. Thank you.
Okay, we totally screwed this up, but here's the bottom line for people. They hired three front office guys. You'll never hear from them again at the end. That's what it is.
Right. Unless things go really, really wrong.
Yes, then you might hear from them. If one of them, takes photos of hookers on a yacht, for example.
Right.
You might hear about him again, but hopefully that is a thing in the past.
And, I'm not the lawyer here, but I'm just going to give everyone life advice. Don't take photos of the hookers on your yachts.
I'm the lawyer here, and I'll tell you this much. If you're going to have hookers on a yacht, don't give law enforcement proof that you brought hookers on a yacht.
Right.
Or how about this? When you go on a yacht, leave all the women ashore and just enjoy a time out in sea alone or with your buddies, not being nagged.
That's a novel thought, one I wholeheartedly approve of.
Yes. Just be the old man in the sea. Try to catch a
fish.
Yeah, that'll go well. Yeah. Float around angry and shaking a fist at the sky.
Having fishing rods, some beer for you, orange soda, Steve. Oh, no, you can't even drink soda anymore.
Just give me some water. I'll be fine.
Whatever your beverage of choice is, I'll bring it along. I got you covered.
Maybe, what about a seltzer? Nothing sugar, just a little,
I don't like seltzer water. That's not good.
No? Why am I shocked?
I like two things. That's it.
All right. So let's change gears. Steve wrote, it took two articles to cover quarterbacks.
Really?
Quarterbacks is the position group we're going to talk about today. There's a lot of quarterbacks to talk about. Obviously, we're going to focus in on the likely candidates for Washington at number two. But Steve spent a lot of time watching all the quarterbacks in this draft for the most part. I'm assuming, similar to what we'll talk about, you've spent more time on a couple guys than others.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I have a methodology that I do kind of standard every year for this. And I followed that methodology, except I did more film than I normally do on the top of the draft picks because this is critical to Washington.
Right.
And this always takes me a really long time to do this, which is why I haven't written any other position groups this year, because I spent a ton of time doing this because I'm just obsessive like this.
Yeah. See, and like I said, it got so long, you're like, should we break it in half? And I said, yes, make it a two-parter. This is your Game of Thrones season 7 and 8.
Yeah, really. It is. Now, yeah.
before you jump into this, I want you to kind of give everyone an idea of how accurate or not accurate you've been. Because I mean, like CJ Stroud, you're one of the few that put him the one in that class last year.
Okay, so I don't proclaim to be a film expert.
Of course not. Right.
I didn't play college football. I played high school football. But I've been pretty accurate at this, and I think I'd say I've hit on almost everybody. I missed on Josh Rosen. I thought Josh Rosen's going to be good. Missed on him. But of the guys I really studied, he's really the only one I've missed on, like really, really missed on.
Am I misremembering? I thought you and I were both a little higher on Zach Wilson than
you. Well, that was the other one I was going to say. I was a little – Zach Wilson hasn't been a total bust. I thought he was going to be better than he was. Yeah. But I would say that one, I'd give myself a C- maybe for that one. But like Rosen was an F. But yeah. So I have been very good. And the reason is I think a lot of these experts out there overthink these things. And they talk themselves into seeing more than they're seeing. And in terms of NFL teams, these coaches are such a bunch of arrogant narcissists that they will overlook a lot of errors in a player's game because they think they can coach them up. And the truth of the matter is there's some immutable characteristics for NFL quarterbacks that 95% of them will have, the good ones. Yeah. And there's going to be guys who break the mold, you know. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, you can see what's going to happen.
The other thing that I think is always tough for us, and, you know, you can try and find information about, it's the mental aspect of the game for most quarterbacks.
Yes.
You know, when we talk about those two guys that we just mentioned, Rosen and Wilson, the pressure is what destroyed them more than anything. It wasn't talent. Both those guys have enough talent where they could have had success in the league.
It's situational. Yeah. Situational, you know, like Josh Rosen was in a terrible situation.
Right. And if you are not tough enough to handle that adversity, and, you know, these are young guys. I'm not, you know, casting aspersions in that regard. A lot of guys are still trying to figure it out at 22. So.
Oh, and the other one, by the way, is Haskins. I refuse to take an L on Haskins because Washington totally screwed that kid up.
I would die on the mountain saying that if he was handled properly, he would be on his second contract with us right now.
I totally agree.
100%.
I totally agree.
I disagree with both of you, but that's fine.
That's right. Yeah, it's in the past. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through from my starting with the top, the way I have them ranked, and you guys can either agree or disagree. It's fine, but I think that's the easy way to go through this. So there's a clear and obvious number one here. Kaleigh Williams is the number one. There's no doubt in my mind. It's clear cut. There's no debate about it. I know to start with the negative, he's had some strange behavior. You know, he's shown some signs of immaturity here and there. He, you know, he hugged his mom in the stands. He was wearing, you know, nail polish, and he had some like bizarre, totally unrealistic contract demands at, you know, one point, or like rumors. I get all that. But from on the field, I don't think that is going to make him a bust. That may make him may degrade him a little bit in my score, but he's the number one. And the reason is, this kid has got an unbelievable arm. He's totally fearless. He really can play within a system. He really can. USC had him. Yes, he went. He didn't really go rogue so much as he moved around a lot. He's. People want to call him Patrick Mahomes because he has this sidearm delivery he does sometimes. He's really actually Russell Wilson. This is what he really is. He's a bigger Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson holds the ball a lot, runs around, delays, scrambles. This is what Kaleigh Williams does. And that throwing motion thing, granted, Mahomes. But he goes off script a lot. But he's very accurate, very, very accurate, especially short and middle passes. A little less accurate in deep routes, but that's to be expected. He's got elite arm strength. He's got such elite arm strength that part of the reason he's going off script all the time is he knows he can just gun it in there when his technique is off. His arm is that good. But I think he's overall the number one. What he'll have to work on is exactly what the Seahawks did with Wilson. You have to rein his tendencies in a little bit, keep him confined in an offense, have him scramble more on script, and have him move around, granted. But if you can tailor an offense to keep him upright for a couple seconds longer, I think you could have a successful Russell Wilson here. So you guys' thoughts.
Now with you watching it, to the one common thing or knock that I've heard against him, and I've seen in some of the breakdowns I watched of him, is that he tends to scramble out of clean pockets too often because he's looking for that big play downfield. And if he's not, and he's not, he doesn't seem like he naturally climbs the pocket very well.
He never climbs the pocket, okay?
And he just wants to take it to the outside.
Yes. Well, that, you know, think about it. This is Russell Wilson in his first few years. This is why I said he's the comp. He's playing exactly like Russell Wilson did. And the beauty about what Seattle did with Russell Wilson is they made it work. They had receivers who can deal with that. Remember, like Paul Richardson, if you recall, was not a 50-50 jump ball guy. And he, in his opening comments in Washington, Paul Richardson was talking about, I finally have a quarterback who can, you know, work to my skills, because Paul Richardson was a timing guy, you know.
Right.
But so Seattle had an offensive line, a running game, and a scheme that made Russell Wilson work. And if you can do that with Caleb Williams, I think he's going to be really, really good. And I actually think he could, I think he's probably better. You would, most of the common conception of Williams is have him throwing vertical deep because he's so good at that. He's really freaking good in short to midterm, though. Really good. I actually think he'd be great, you know, great in a, you know, like maybe not a West Coast offense because you want him to run around, but an offense that focuses on quick short outs and stuff. He'd be good at that.
I mean, when you have a real arm and you can throw darts like that, it makes you very hard to intercept. It makes a lot of that stuff more difficult.
Yes.
So I can see that. And look, I think he is the clear-cut number one, like you said. In fact, Chicago isn't even talking to any other quarterbacks. Oh, he is not visiting with any other teams. He's going 1-1. Everyone just accepts that at this
point. I'm surprised they didn't just – it wouldn't surprise me if they didn't just go ahead and sign him early. I mean, they're allowed to do that.
They are allowed to do that. The NFL, even though they allow it, I feel like they are –
they don't really want you to. They want the tension and the drama and the draft day.
Yeah, they want that full 15 minutes or whatever.
But they want the shot from the table, you know, him hugging his mom. And that's they want that. Yeah.
Right.
And there's no reason they have to do it, really. I mean, no, he's not going anywhere. You know.
I know. But the point being, he's not coming here. I know there are a lot of DC fans who really wanted him to somehow end up here and wanted the team to trade up. It's just not happening. You need to all accept that.
No,
right
but
now.
I'll tell you one thing. Caleb Williams is a native of Washington, D.C., went to Gonzaga College High School, which is in the District of Columbia. That sometimes doesn't go well. See Young, Chase.
Yep.
You know, when you come straight back home, I tend to think that there's, especially a quarterback, there's going to be a ton of distractions, a ton of people around you. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be better for him if he goes away from home. You know, he's not moving to Antarctica. He's only moving to Chicago, but it's not where he doesn't have to deal with all of that all the time. So I actually think he's probably better off in Chicago than Washington for that reason.
Now, the one thing I do wonder about at the next level, he won't be able to scramble out of the pocket all the time like he is.
But that's what you have to rein him in.
Yeah.
You have to have some design rollouts. You could even run some maybe RPOs with him, mm-hmm. you know. Like Russell Wilson does go off script a lot, but it's, I'm talking about the good Russell Wilson in Seattle, not whatever this, you know.
Prime, like, Russell Wilson, not.
Yeah, not this, like, the corpse of Russell Wilson, you know, we saw last year. But it was done in a way that somehow worked, you know, and they built an offense tailored to it, and they have receivers tailored to it, you know, and that's, and like, Caleb Williams has a strong running game at USC, and that's the other thing. You know, some of these other quarterbacks don't have that. And so I would hit up who was the coach at Seattle?
Pete Carroll.
Yeah, hit up Pete Carroll. Ask Pete Carroll what to do with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you might have a point there. They will need to tailor it to him like that. And
just let him go totally off script. And you have to teach him that, yes, your arm can get you out of trouble, but he does take risks sometimes that isn't going to go well in the NFL, because he can get away with that in college. And so that's just a learning curve. It's the key with Wilson is Chicago is going to have to make sure they don't shove him into something that won't work. Tailor an offense to his strengths, and his strengths allow him to move, allow him to use his arm, but you got to give him time. You can't give him in a 2-second dump off every single play kind of offense. That's not,
I do also think he needs to learn how to, and by the way, this is my criticism with, I think, all the top quarterbacks right now. they're all in shotgun only offenses in college.
Williams occasionally was under center.
Yeah, but
not a ton. But no. He was more than the others. He occasionally was under
yes,
center.
Yes, you're right about that. He was more than the others. But I very much am concerned about, do these guys have that rhythm to play three-step drop, five-step drop?
What we'll find is that some of these guys would be better at it than others.
Yes. Well, if there's any indication with Shane Waldron, their offensive coordinator there, he spent the previous 3 years at Seattle, what kind of offense they'll run, it's going to be a pretty strong run-oriented offense. Mm-hmm. Fed off a lot of misdirection. Yep. And I think a lot of that, I think the Bears did a good job just by kind of looking, kind of an overview of what his offense is, did a good job on doing, on bringing in a guy that can tailor that offense on utilizing his ability to roll out and use misdirection and everything. So I think they're getting off on the right foot on having that offensive coordinator and Shane Waldron become
the right. Yeah, and you said the magic words, Seattle. Yep. So yeah. Let's move on, because Washington isn't getting Caleb Williams.
Right.
Unless the sky falls. My number two is Jaden Daniels. Now, from what I understand on what you guys have told me on Twitter and in our comment section, there is apparently a war between Drake May sect and then the Jaden Daniels sect.
Yeah.
You can call the factions.
I call them a sect just because you want to call them a faction. I'm going to be disagreeable.
That's okay.
I'm going to call them both cults.
That's even better. We'll go with cult. And so I think Jaden Daniels is clearly a better prospect. So let's start with the obvious, which is he's skinny, right? That you hear about that, but he's not that thin. If you really look at him and his build, what he's built like is a big, he's built like a tall wide receiver.
Yeah.
He's not skin and bones. He's just a little thinner than maybe you would want, but he uses that to his advantage because he's a heck of a runner. He's more of a runner in the vein of like RG3, mm-hmm. In that he's not Barry Sanders. He's not going to evade and run over people and that kind of thing. He's more kind of a sprinter.
Yeah.
That's more along lines with Daniels. But what I like about Daniels is, I mean, the guy is unbelievably accurate. Unbelievably. He's just so he's got another high plus arm, highly accurate, can consistently drive the ball deep.
Mm-hmm.
He can hit the receivers in stride. I saw him hit receivers in stride in one-on-one matchups over and over and over again. He is great in that regard. Now, what I didn't like about him is his eyes. He stared down receivers sometimes. Mm-hmm. He didn't always – rarely did he get past his second read. Sometimes he didn't get past his first read. Those are the negatives because, again, in college, it's easier to win like that. Whereas in the NFL, I think he's going to have to make progress on that. And the other thing is about him – the man will never, he is like genetically barred from ever throwing the ball away. His natural instinct is anytime it goes south, he's going to run immediately. And he took so many humongous hits. An NFL coach is going to have to teach him sometimes live to play another day, throw the ball away. He doesn't do that. So I think those are the positives and negatives of him. Overall, I don't think, strictly ranking him, I don't think he's probably not worth the number two overall pick because he does have negatives. But if you need a quarterback, he's your, for Washington, he's your guy. I called him in my column a top half of round one guy, I think he's probably going to go number two overall. It's not a huge overdraft, but it's a bit of an overdraft, I think. So you guys' thoughts.
Well, I will start off by saying when I watched video of him, watched Twitter or not Twitter, some Twitter, but mostly YouTube and stuff like that. What I'm actually very impressed with him, everyone focuses on the running. Like you said, when he is standing tall in the pocket and just slinging it, his form is really solid.
That's what I said. I mean, there is no problem with his form, his throwing motion, his feet.
Right. He stands tall. He's not like crouching down ever to throw it. He's it, it's like Drew Bledsoe, like his throwing motion.
And a lot of these guys with who are the taller ones, especially, will have an elongated throwing motion that's really, really slow. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have that. His arm is great. Absolutely. It's just it's his tendency with his eyes that scared me most. He's going to have to learn how to read the field because he just didn't do that. And that I think that and his this refusal to ever throw the ball away is he's got to fix those two things. That's why, number two overall, if they need him, yeah. But strictly ranked, I think I'd put it middle
around. Part of that also is, you look at the receivers he had. He had two first round picks for receivers. And not really a whole lot else, let's be honest. Like, he didn't have a great tight end to throw to.
He has a first-round pick as one receiver, though.
Yeah.
His number one receiver is a first-round. It can be a first-round pick.
I think his number two is that caliber, too.
Back end of the first, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, literally, and part of that is you're going to have one on one side of the field, one on the other. So he's just reading that one side of the field each
That's what
time.
He's exactly what he's doing. That's exactly what he's doing. Yeah. And I mean, it works – for him, because it works for that offense, LSU can win like that. So there's no need to do more. I mean, that's so whether he can actually do it or not is kind of an open question. But I think my job is to present both the positives and the negatives. To me, that's the negative.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Well, I think, as far as what I've seen of him, the things that stood out with me. As I shared you guys a video today with Jordan Palmer when he broke down Jaden Daniels. And of all the tape that I had, well, not all the tape, I've watched the scouts that I've seen or the evaluators I've seen, one common thing that he does in almost everything, and I'm sure you saw this, Steve, is that no matter what position he's in, or scrambling right, scrambling left, when he's on the move, his eyes maintain downfield. And when before he goes and make a throw, he resets himself. He gets his hips where it needs to be. I mean, even his foot placement, Jordan Palmer pointed out, as he's rolling out, when he was ready to hit Thomas down the field, he took his foot and stepped to the inside. So the ball.
He's actually better than
bounce.
Caleb Williams was at that. Caleb Williams throws a lot of balls, when he's totally off balance. Just his arm is so good, it doesn't matter. Right. But that's why I said Daniel's form, great form at all times. I think that's I totally agree. I wrote that in the piece. I endorse what you just said.
Now, I think the biggest concern a lot of fans have, you touched on it, Steve, is his size, that he's skinny and he, like you said, receiver frame. For a lot of fans, I think we flash back to RG3, who very much, I always thought, had that same kind of build where he looked more like a receiver than a quarterback. He was bigger, but
actually, RG3 looked like a sprinter to me, not a football player.
Yeah,
right.
He was very lengthy, long legs when he ran. Yeah, and I would even say young Lamar Jackson, similar to at first, like he, little on the thin side. A lot of these more mobile quarterbacks have that build. Guys fill out. Though, like he's coming out at 21 and at 210 pounds. I won't be surprised if by the time he's in that third or fourth year, he'll be in that 230 range. That's what happens.
Oh, probably. And I'm telling you guys, I mean, he doesn't look like a string bean. He does not look like he doesn't belong on a football field. Is he a little thin? Yes.
He's not Emmanuel Forbes.
He's not.
The one thing that stood out with me when I was watching everyone break him down was, and I started this comp real early in the offseason, was Randall Cunningham for the Eagles. And when I looked up their size comparisons, they're the same height, same weight, and Randall Cunningham wasn't an elusive runner. He had that straightaway speed, had that kind of like quick burst, But he's a more refined passer than what Cunningham ever was. Of course, Cunningham back in the 80s right there, I mean, UNLV just utilized him as basically a runner. That was it. That's all they utilized him for in some pass
football.
Exactly.
It's a decent comp, though. It's not a bad comp.
And that's one thing that screamed out with me with him was Randall Cunningham right off the bat.
The thing I'll also say is, look, if the RG3 thing scares you with his injury history, Daniels doesn't have an injury history. it like he had like a hangnail or something very minor and missed one game, I think.
Daniels has played an amazing. I guess I didn't go over that because we've got a lot of players to go here. But so Daniels has played and started 55 games.
That's a lot of football.
In 5 years, it is a ton of football. I'm in favor of more games the better for the most part in college quarterbacks.
Yeah. And he stays healthy. So some guys just have a healthy gene, some guys don't. We're going to get to one who doesn't down the list here. So
I think this is probably Washington's pick.
Because
they really need a quarterback. Again, if you had to rank him, strictly speaking, I'd probably rank him a little farther down. But, I mean, there's a plus for a quarterback. You got to grab a quarterback, and this is him. The reason why I think it's him is that Drake May was my number three, kind of by default, and we'll get to why. Drake May, 6'4", 210, which, by the way, is – sorry, I'm on the wrong page.
No, that's Jane Daniels. Who's 210.
Yeah, Drake May is 6'4", 223, so, you know, 13 pounds heavier than Daniels. Right. Drake May looks like he fell out of a quarterback factory.
Right.
You know, and to be perfectly honest, I think there's kind of a bit of inherent – racial stereotypes that go on with some of these quarterbacks sometimes.
Sure.
And like the white quarterbacks especially get viewed as one way, and sometimes the African-American quarterbacks, you know, get viewed as runners and movers, and you know, there's a lot of stereotypes sometimes that don't apply. It's, you know, like Lamar Jackson when he came out, for example, you know, right. Even seasoned vets called him a runner. It's ridiculous. So here's the thing. Drake May would be great in a quarterback drill in the combine on pro day.
Mm-hmm.
He has a great arm, but he's very inconsistent. His footwork is off the wall and strange. His throwing motion, it was one of those, I said it before, it's like an elongated motion. He's really tall, 6'4". It's not a quick release, I don't think. Because of all that, he goes, it's very hot or cold. He's a very, very, he's a high ceiling, low floor guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's prone to streaks of significant inaccuracies. I don't think he reads a field very well. I think he processes the field slowly. What he has a tendency to do is when things are going well, all is well. But when the life gets tough, he falls apart. Mm-hmm. And I think that the reason why Drake May is getting such high praise from some draft analysts and coaches, it's the classic, we said it earlier. Sometimes these coaches are so arrogant, they think they can coach this stuff out of them. Most of the time you can't. And so I viewed May, I think his weaknesses outweigh his strengths. There's been a lot of guys. Jeff George had a ton of arms, had a ton of benefits, you know, unbelievable arm. That's kind of Drake May. But the intangibles and is the mental part, I think, is what scares me about May. And so I wouldn't want to take a chance on him in the first round if it were me. I would take a chance on this kind of arm in round two where I don't have the bigger contract, but I personally wouldn't draft him in round one.
He will get drafted in round one.
Yeah. Oh, he will. I'm just saying what I would do it. No, but he's going to go top five.
I look at May, you know, originally when I was thinking of May, I was kind of, looking, you know, they talk about what Josh Allen, the comp with Josh Allen, they fixed Josh Allen, they sort of fixed Josh Allen.
They didn't really.
Yeah, they fix sort Josh of did, Allen. Right? Yeah, but they structured the offense to tailor around to hide his weaknesses,
yes,
and to work through his strengths. But see, the problem with that theory is that Josh Allen is a one-off. He's an anomaly. He's a unicorn. Other quarterbacks, they can't fix that way. They haven't fixed that way. So until you see that upward trend like that consistently, that is. You know, you don't want to, I don't think you want to bank that top three pick for it. But then when you were talking about his mental aspect of the game and everything, right away I was thinking in my mind, well, probably like just like Ryan Leaf. Ryan Leaf had an amazing arm. Ryan Leaf had, you know, he could sling the ball anywhere, but he was not mechanically strong. His footwork would always constantly get inconsistent when a pocket was kind of getting, you know, kind of collapsing around. When things didn't go well, he started to fold. And that's exactly what I imaged when you were talking about that with May. So now I'm thinking Ryan Leaf when that aspect.
I hate to say he's going to be that big of a bust. You know, Ryan Leaf was probably the biggest bust in NFL history. And I'm not saying May is going to be that. I'm just saying I don't think he's ultimately going to be the savior, particularly in a bad franchise. It'll be even harder for him in a bad franchise. Alex, sorry we cut you off.
No, I was just going to kind of say with the Josh Allen thing, you know, we did see it with guys like Hurts, too, and it wasn't a trick. They literally just were like, all right, let's get as many elite receivers on this roster as possible. Well, we can afford it, and, you know, that'll help them. You know, it'll be very interesting to see what Buffalo does or how Josh Allen does in Buffalo now that they've gotten rid of their best receiver. I think their best two receivers, I mean.
Well, I'll tell you the other thing that scares me about May is his performance in 2023 was less than his performance in 2022. Why is that? You know, is it a mental thing? Could he not handle the pressure? Was the team around him worse? Where was his competition better? I mean, what is it? It's probably some combination of all those things.
Yeah.
So I if it were me, I would stay away from him. If I were Washington, who knows what they'll do, obviously. But again, because these NFL coaches think they can fix people, and most of the time they can't. All right. Have we hit May enough?
I think so.
Okay. How are we doing on time here, guys?
We're at 41 minutes.
Okay.
Right
we
now,
need to rush through us. Okay. So Michael Penix, we're going to go faster through the rest of these. Michael Penix is my number four here. This guy's got so many good strengths. I love Michael Penix, but he's got some downsides that caused me to rank him lower. He is a classic NFL pocket passer. He's the only one of these guys that knows how to climb the pocket.
Yeah.
None of the rest of these guys can do this at all. Michael Penix can do it. I don't think he's as dynamic as some of these other quarterbacks. He's more a true classic NFL pocket passing drop back quarterback. In my view, that is who Michael Penix is. He's not going to be dynamic. He's in his play style and his throws nearly as much as these other guys. But he's very good at that. I mean, he does have some negatives.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he's another guy at University of Washington was in the national championship game. They had an unbelievable offensive line. And when the offensive line around him cratered, his performance dropped off a little more than did some of these other quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And so that is a negative. He does have a tendency. I noted that he will throw into really risky tight windows, you know, and that it's a good thing sometimes, but sometimes he makes throws he probably shouldn't. And you're going to have NFL defenses that can take advantage of it that college defenses couldn't. The big negative though of Penix, his injury history is just a travesty of justice. He tore his right ACL twice, fractured his shoulder twice, shoulder once, separated right shoulder. Now he's lefty, so it wasn't his throwing shoulder, but still, I cannot in good conscience tell a team to draft a guy that's that terrible of an injury history in the first round. So that's my big problem with Penix is otherwise clean injury history, I would think he's a middle of round one type of guy. That's where I would view him. But with the injury history, I'd rank him. I put round two for him. Your thoughts?
I'm with you. Honestly, if he didn't have that injury history, he might be your number two or number one quarterback.
He would have been ahead of May, at least for me. I don't know if I would have ranked him ahead of Dan. You can disagree with me. I think
his ability to play traditional NFL style quarterback is a huge thing.
It's an underrated talent at this point.
It is. So, but injuries can't do it.
Yeah, I agree with the injury though. If it wasn't for the injuries, I think he's right there in conversation, whether it's Daniels or him back and forth. You could probably play that argument. The only thing that I noticed from him when I watched him in the national championship game was he had a couple opportunities and clean pockets, and he went to get the receiver deep, and he floated the ball well out of the range of his receiver. In the same game, he did that with Ozunda. I think that's how you say his last receiver name, Ozunda. And he had him wide open, single coverage, and he just – aired the ball. He airmailed the ball downfield. And to do it a couple of times in the course of the year is one thing. But on the biggest stage and the biggest moment, and you do it a couple of times in that same game.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did that in the national championship game. And of course, you know, he's facing the best team in the country.
Right.
You know, in a stressful situation. There's no doubt. I mean, that's why I didn't have him ranked high. That's why I don't think I would put him above Jane Daniels. You know, and to finish the thought on the injury. So the whole side of the whole part of the story is that the first torn ACL was in 2018. The second was in 2020. So it has been a number of years. The shoulder was 2019, 2021. We haven't seen his medical records. We're also not medical experts. And so it's possible that his medical records may be different than what we are assuming. We don't know that. So, you know, nor are we going to know that.
I would just, again, if you were gun shy about Jane Daniels because of possibility of injury, this guy's got the big red flag that says possibility of injury.
I agree. I'm just saying the other side of it would be maybe a team doctor could convince himself that it's not a big deal.
Maybe.
All right. So a lot of guys had J.J. McCarthy ranked over Penix. I do not. I had J.J. McCarthy ranked number 5. He's another guy, 6'2", 219. He's kind of in there. He did some of the combine. He ran a 4.48 supposedly before the season. So he does have some speed. I think he's more of a classic short to mid-range quarterback. He doesn't throw deep much, you know, very rarely. He's accurate. He sees the field well. Good touch on the ball. Michigan had him in a bunch of, you know, NFL style offensive formations and systems. So that's good. I don't think he's as dynamic a player, and I don't think he's as consistent of a player. And I don't think he has as many, he doesn't have the breadth of talent and options that as does Michael Penix or the rest of these guys. That's why I ranked him lower at the end of the day. And I'm always a bit leery also of these quarterbacks in really good teams because they've got so much talent around them that it kind of helps them.
Yeah.
You know, I think he would be a good West Coast offense quarterback. Quick drop, quick dump offs, quick passes, not a ton of vertical. He's just not going to be good at that. So that's my thoughts on McCarthy. Your thoughts?
Yeah, when I see McCarthy, I kind of see Jordan Love right here. I see a guy that probably really should be in a situation where he sits for a year or two. He's a guy that I think needs to have a system that's geared more. He feeds off the run because there's a reason why Michigan dedicated their scheme around the run. You know, they were a run first team. They were a defensive team. But every time they did ask McCarthy to make a play or to come up with a big play, he came up with a big play. So he has that ability. At first of all, the hype, I'm thinking, well, it's going to be Zach Wilson all over again. But I just like, you know what? Now when I look at that now, he's a much better quarterback than what Zach Wilson was. But I just think he's kind of in a position where he should come into a team where they're willing to let him sit at least 1 year and to kind of build a roster around him and get him going for that, to compete for the following year and then move forward with him. That's what I see with McCarthy.
He kind of reminds me of Mac Jones a little bit.
A little bit of Mac Jones, although I think he's more mobile than Mac Jones.
Oh, he is. But I mean, in terms of like a guy who is from a big, a quality college system.
Right.
He can run a team. Is he dynamic? No. Can he pass? Yes. But I don't think he's a guy who's a big difference maker, and that's what I mean by Mac Jones.
Yeah, I got you. Skill-wise, I said it the other show, he reminds me a lot of Colt McCoy for some reason. I think he's got supposedly great study habits. All those, like, work ethic things are really good with him, supposedly. At least that's what his former head coach, now the coach of the San Diego Los Angeles Chargers is saying.
Always be the San Diego Chargers.
It will always be the San Diego Chargers to me, too.
It's like they'll always be the Washington Redskins.
Yeah.
They will, yes.
Yeah. And the Oakland Raiders. And Rams are the only one I'm okay with. Rams,
I don't really care about the Raiders too much because they've been Oakland, they've been L.A., you know.
But back to McCarthy. He reminds me a lot. When I say he reminds me of Colt McCoy, it's not a knock. People forget Colt McCoy before he, like, ruined his throwing arm his rookie year. He was a really good quarterback prospect at one point. So that's what I'm more talking about is he reminds me of that version of Colt McCoy that has a lot. He has some upside. He has some potential. But there's always going to be limits, I think, on him overall.
I mean, it's a bit of a knock.
A little bit.
What a nice guy. No one hates Colt McCoy.
Oh, I hate Colt McCoy. He's not a nice guy at all. I mean, Colt McCoy, scumbag of a human being.
Well, you were a Hatfield guy. We all know that.
No, I Colt McCoy. No, fine, outstanding person. Okay.
Let's move on.
So Spencer Rattler. I really like Spencer Rattler. Is he going to be a first-round draft pick? No, but I think he's got a certain playmaker quality around to him that you can't find in a lot of quarterbacks. The downside, he's small. He's only 6 feet tall. He's got a really slim build. You know, he looks kind of slim. He's one of those guys, like, unlike Jaden Daniels, who looks like he belongs, Spencer Rattler kind of looks like he doesn't belong. From a size perspective. Right. But what I like about him is he is totally unafraid. Who he reminds me of is Taylor Heineke. He is totally unafraid to try to hit a tight window at all levels, including deep. He's a good playmaker. He's accurate. Better accurate when he has, when he has time. Also, like, South Carolina's receivers suck giant hairy donkey balls.
Yeah.
I mean, they are terrible. They dropped balls routinely that were hit right in the hands. They didn't help him at all. Now, the negative is that it's like his eyes are exactly tethered to a receiver. He does not have the ability to try to track anywhere else. He stares down his receivers consistently, will not move off of them. A lot of the better quarterbacks, like Michael Penix did this, and good NFL quarterbacks can do this. They know where they're going. They're going to fool the defenses with their eyes by moving off and coming back. Spencer Rattler.
You always start by, like, a quick scan.
Yeah, Michael Penix can do this. Spencer Rattler is not totally lacks that genetic. He's genetically incapable of it. So that's his negative. He's got the gene that says I cannot look away. And the other thing about Rattler is his mechanics tended to fall apart, under pressure. Mm. But what I liked about him again, and so I thought he was maybe a mid-round pick, round four probably. I liked his moxie. I liked his ability to be a playmaker, unafraid in a good way, can hit tight windows, but a small guy who his eyes are not going to fool anybody, that is not a starter. That's my thought.
I mean, it is interesting. There was a point in his career, I think when he was at Oklahoma, that people were arguing he should have come out in the draft, maybe his sophomore year, and he would have been a first-round pick. That's one of the things that's fascinating to me is there's a number of guys actually in this draft class who at one point were being talked about as maybe a top quarterback in the league and have fallen off.
Well, so I didn't mention this here because we don't have time for this. You can read about their bios in my columns. But almost all of these guys have transferred. There are so many guys in this class who've played 5 and 6 years. And it's not just because of injury. They just keep transferring around and keep playing.
Right.
And Rattler's one of these guys. Yeah. He was played for Oklahoma 2019, 2021, then moved to South Carolina for 2 more years. Yeah. He's one of those guys. Dave, your thoughts.
As far as Spencer Rattler, I didn't really watch much of him or see many of his games. And I was going to go kind of on what Lance Zierlein was saying about him, but he kind of aligns quite a bit, a lot with you. Mechanics he struggles with. He defaults to his back leg too many times with his throws when he's in pressure. you know, so which leads to errant throws and so forth. But as far as that, I mean, I mean, he's probably a really good backup quarterback, and he's a guy that might come in. But the only thing that I would like Alex to do, though, is everywhere you heard the name Heinicke, to bleep that out. We don't need the Heinicke hire to sit there and go, we have our new quarterback. Now we need to trade back, and draft him, and he's our guy. So we need to bleep that out.
Yeah, we're not doing that. We're not advocating
for the draft Spencer Rattler. I'm saying that he reminds me of Taylor Heinicke, a guy who is limited in physical skills but has plays with a certain fearless quality, and he does have – Spencer Rattler is a leader. Yeah. That's what I mean. So
also, just a great last name. He really. I hope he goes to Arizona with just the name Rattler.
Really? Yeah, they ought to name the whole team after him. Arizona Rattlers.
Yeah, better than Cardinals.
Okay. Bo Nix. Bo Nix is the plain white toast of the 2024 quarterback draft class. He's boring. He has some skills. Mm-hmm. Nothing particularly stands out about him. I think has good but not great arm strength. He's not a dynamic quarterback. He's not going to make a ton of mistakes necessarily. But I don't think he's in any way a guy who's going to make a huge difference in the NFL. The thing about Nix, this guy is the short pass master.
Yeah.
Does this over and over again all the time, almost to their detriment. Now, this may be a function of Oregon's offense. They play a unique kind of offense, granted, but I can only go on what I saw on the film, and the dude just almost never looks deep. And to me, it's almost overkill, because an NFL offense can key in on that, and it's going to be tough for him. So I don't have a huge amount of negatives to say about him. I think, again, he's my comp for him would be a piece of plain white toast.
When it comes
crazy, I will say that.
What's that?
His accuracy last year was crazy.
Well, if you look at what he's throwing, it's no wonder.
Yeah.
How many passes he threw, flat passes, you know, or right in the flats, 2 yards downfield, all the time.
Yeah.
Now, see, here is my problem I have with Bo Nix, because I hear a lot of people talk about, well, look what he did at Oregon. He did really good. He had 74 in his 2 years combined, 74 completion rating, and over 9 yards per attempt throw, blah, 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 all that stuff. But you know what, though? Let's go back to his time in Auburn. It's 3 years in Auburn, playing SEC, playing SEC defenses, playing Alabama, playing all these other teams. What did he do? He only managed a 59.4 completion percentage, 6.9 yards per attempt, and an overall rating of 126, which in college football isn't great. It's okay for that.
Yeah, the formula for a quarterback rating in college is drastically different.
Much different, yes.
Yeah.
You know,
you can get like a 300 in college, right? Like,
I don't think it goes that high, but I don't use it because I don't know what it means. I haven't studied it. I know it's drastically different.
Right. Well, I was going to say, because you compare it to his time in Oregon where he was 177. So, I mean, you could see that change. I mean, he played in the Pac-12 the last 2 years. I mean, there's not a whole lot you can gauge off of that. They don't play defense in the Pac-12. Defense doesn't exist in the Pac-12.
Well, the Pac-12 doesn't exist anymore, technically, but continue.
That is true, too. You're absolutely right there. So it's just Bo Nix is a guy, you know, I have no interest in. I don't think he's going to last after a couple years in the pros. I just don't think he's going to have what it takes to play at that next level, in my opinion.
Fair enough. I look at him as a backup journeyman, you know, type, probably. I called him round 4. It wouldn't surprise me if we went lower than that. Round 5, you know, maybe.
Like you said, odds are pretty low for him.
We're going to blow through the last few because we're running out of time here. But so the day 3 guys, I think, Jordan Travis, number 1, Florida State. So I like Jordan Travis. He's got kind of a smooth quality to him. And the way he passes, the way he plays, the ball comes out really nice out of his hand. I do like that. Now, the downside is, one, he had a serious ankle injury in November, you know, toward the end of the college season. So he's got to get past that. The reports that I read are that he's supposedly recovered pretty well. It's going to be cleared soon, so we'll see about that. But the downside is, despite the fact that the ball comes off his hands well, his accuracy was kind of so-so. So I'm not – just because I say I like him, I mean I like him by day three standards, okay? Of the back of the draft guys, I think he was the best. That's what I mean by it. He does progress through his reads sometimes, not as quickly as you'd want, but he can. So I think he looks to me like a legit NFL backup quarterback. All right. I'm assuming you guys don't have a ton of opinions.
No, I think we're just going to let you fly through.
All right, these. Okay. Let me blow through these. Okay. Michael Pratt, four seasons at Tulane, 6'2.5", 217. Another guy who's a classic pocket passer, NFL level arm strengths. He's a little inconsistent with his mechanics. His footwork is really weird. Waits too long to make decisions about where he's going to go. And he can get away with that in college, but not in the NFL. And the other thing is, like, if you look at who he played with Tulane, it's just second rate.
Well, you know, it's a mid-major school. I mean,
yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. No offense to Tulane, but I mean, I don't know if he can continue even at this level when he moves up to the NFL from Tulane. So that's why I had him below Pratt. And Joe Milton is next. Interesting cat here. Tennessee, huge, 6'5", 244. Very strong arm, very mobile. But this guy is just not a good quarterback, okay? He's one of these guys somebody may draft because he's got a ton of physical gifts,
Mm-hmm.
But stares down the receiver, doesn't know how to go through reads, never went through his – they never even really got off his first read, much less a second or third read, never. Doesn't know how to climb the pocket under pressure at all. But what I wrote here is I think I'm going to stick with the idea – this is a quote from me. The idea of Joe Milton is better than the reality of Joe Milton. The idea of Milton is huge arm, dynamic, big guy, fast, runner, all of that. But he's just not an NFL quarterback, I don't think. He may be overdrafted, which is why I include him, because he's got physical characteristics that people like. I think he's a good college quarterback. I don't think he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. And then last few, just to remember, we'll blow through these. I didn't watch nearly the amount of film or anything on these guys. I ran out of time, but I just want to mention them. Sam Hartman from Wake Forest, won at Notre Dame, so 6 years. Inaccurate mechanics problems, didn't see good arm strength. Devin Leary, North Carolina State, 6'1", 215, another guy inaccurate. Austin Reed, he's 24 years old, has played six seasons, I believe it is, Western Kentucky. Keaton Slovis, started at USC, transferred to Pitt, transferred to BYU, weak arm, inaccurate. And I got to mention, just because this is Washington, Tua's younger brother, Tagliavoe, I guess his name is.
Yeah.
Look, local hero maybe because he's at Maryland. He's 5'10". No.
Yeah.
That's my analysis of Tagliavoe. No.
No one has any illusions of him doing anything in the NFL.
No, but somebody, a few fans out there, he may get signed as an undrafted free agent somewhere, camp arm or something, but no.
No, he's gonna end up in the UFL or something. My prediction. Yeah.
So that's quarterbacks, kiddos, for this year, from my perspective.
I will say, because I mentioned it earlier, Slovis is another guy who at one point was actually touted as possibly a first-round pick, which is wild to me. Like, that fall-off happens.
Well, would anybody care to guess who he got beat out by at USC?
Well, USC, all know. Yeah.
Right.
I think my big thought is this is a very good quarterback draft class compared to the last couple of years. It's not great. It's not like, maybe 2012 prospectively was.
I think it's better in the middle than it is at the top. And I think Caleb Williams isn't the best number one pick we've ever seen either. Rank him below like Trevor Lawrence, for example. I don't think he's at that level.
Sure, but I wouldn't say he's that far beyond it. It's not like he's a second round guy.
No. He's worthy. I just mean, if you're going to rank first round draft picks, I would rank him below some. That's what I'm saying. I think the ones who are definitely worthy, Williams and Daniels. The rest of them, I think somebody's going to overdraft May. Somebody's going to overdraft Penix maybe because of his injuries, but Drake May's for sure going to get overdrafted.
J.J. McCarthy is definitely going to get overdrafted.
J.J. McCarthy, sorry. I meant McCarthy, not Penix. Sorry.
Yeah. But overall, it would not surprise me if a guy like Spencer Rattler, not this year, not right away, if somehow we end up seeing him being a starter for a couple years in the league. You know, like you have enough good guys at that mid area, like you said, that one of these guys is going to surprise us.
It's going to be Rattler.
Rattler, maybe. It might be Penix if he can stay healthy. You know, if he goes to a team and he sits for a while and he's healthy and he comes in at 2 years from now and he's a starter, I won't be shocked.
He's got a ton of talent. I'd be down with him if it wasn't for his injury history.
Yeah.
Spencer, yeah, Taylor, Heinicke, Rattler.
There we go.
Let's start it.
Let's get the jersey made up. Let's do it.
Yeah. So the one thing I'll mention before we do wrap up, the team hosted, I don't know if we mentioned this really, but the team hosted all these QBs except for Caleb Williams at once in there, you know, in person, bring them into the DC area thing. They took them all out to play Top Golf and have dinner. So, and just watch like the top couple QBs interact with each other, which is kind of wild.
Well, and you told, and one of you two sent out, I guess that idiot Mike Florio thought it was stupid. And you know what? I mean, it's a strategy. Who are we to say this isn't going to work? Maybe they wanted to see how they interact with each other. Maybe they wanted to see who's the better leader. Maybe they wanted to see how they did under pressure of having competition right in front of them. There's a lot of reasons why you could say that they did.
Well, see, this is why you do not listen to Mike Florio, period. And Chris Sims, stop pandering to him and listening to him and agreeing to what he says and call him out. This is getting ridiculous. It's old. Because even Albert Breer had talked about, and I shared this with you guys too, this was something that the 49ers had done. And we talked about the 49ers draft class. It wasn't perfect. We all know that. But they still hit on a lot of pieces, and they found good, you know, and they built a championship roster. Most people consider one of the top rosters in the NFL. If that worked, and that scheme and that idea and that philosophy worked, and you didn't complain, Mike Florio, then when 49er did it, let's take away your Washington bias for a second and just understand Peters is adopting what he did in San Francisco, bringing it here.
Right.
All the individual stuff's already taken care of. They know what these guys are individually. Now they want to bring them in a group and they want to see, they want to take them out of their script, you know, because all their agents have them scripted to say this and answer this way. So they're out of their comfort zone. They're going to be in a position where they're unaware of what's going to happen. Now we see how they react. You just want to see how they react to that. And they all may be perfect. Who knows? You know, but you find signs, you find signals. And those are things that Peters is accustomed to looking at. Because why? They did it in San Francisco. He's going to do it here. So, Mike Florio, go back to being a lawyer somewhere and stop
Don't put him in my... In my world, please. We don't want it. But speaking for lawyers everywhere, I know. But speaking for lawyers everywhere, we don't want him back in the cult. Okay, he can go away. Yeah, Mike Foyer needs to go away.
Yeah,
that's my rant. Sorry,
his fake rage was just pathetic in that little thing that he put out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll work or not. I mean, it's as good an idea. It's not like they haven't had one-on-one meals and interviews with these guys already.
It's a strategy. It's not. Yeah. It's not. It's, you know, they're not killing puppies. Okay. They're just bringing guys in, and we'll see if it works. It's not.
And
that,
in fact, they're going to be having one-on-ones with them tomorrow anyway.
Of course they will.
They're here for 2 days. So right, today is that group. Tomorrow's one-on-one for all of them anyway. So what's the big
deal? Yeah, it's crazy.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to move on. I can't let this end without doing the Bob Kraft thing. So I thought.
Okay, let's do the Bob Kraft thing. I was just going to mention how the last part about that whole group thing is that only one quarterback was picked up by the head coach and the GM from the airport, and that was Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, why is that? I wonder.
I don't know. I don't know what happened. So
if you listen to Ron Rivera, don't think too much into it.
Yeah. all right, let's talk about this Bob Kraft rumor that's going on, because it is kind of funny. And the rumor is that apparently Bob Kraft was dissuading teams from hiring Bill Belichick. specifically Atlanta, supposedly maybe Washington, but the conversation's been all about Atlanta, that he contacted Arthur Blank directly and said, do not hire Bill Belichick. You'll be very disappointed. There was another joke about a happy ending that won't come if you hire him. But I think that was more sarcasm than anything. And internet
happy ending won't come if you hire him. Okay. Yes. Yeah. We're going to get thrown off the platform at some point.
Yeah.
I just think this is really funny.
NSFW.
It's really funny because the idea of Bob Kraft saying somebody's too arrogant for a football team.
Right.
That is like Kevin Hart level comedy. You know, really. Could this coming from courtesy of the guy who went to a massage parlor,
right,
and got arrested for it and hired, you know, every lawyer in the sun to, right. You know, I just think it's really funny, and it's so hypocritical that I had to laugh about it. That's all.
Also, I don't know. Look, I mean, he's coming out and saying, oh, no, I never made that phone call. But, you know, these rumors don't just come from nowhere. It's very strange that this is the way he's acting after the man won you, what, 6 rings, 7 rings? Like
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be fair, this came from something called, I guess, where you, Alex, you sent it to me, was from something called at ML Football.
I saw it on a lot. It's been all over the internet.
Sorry. So this is citing ESPN. And so this is the ESPN report for the credit. Yeah.
It's been
let's be fair. I mean, put yourself in a crass position. You couldn't beat Eli Manning 1 out of 2 chances in a Super Bowl, and you lost against Nick Foles. Belichick is a horrible, terrible head coach. He couldn't do it. He choked.
I don't know if he's a horrible, terrible head coach. I don't know if I'd go that far.
That was sarcasm. Yeah. I was just having a little fun.
Yeah. Sorry, I told that totally went over my head. Apologies.
You know what he's really mad about? One of his Super Bowl rings is significantly smaller because it had to be made for a pinky. That's why they're upset. You know? Like, they were in the fingers on one hand.
It's so dumb. I mean, Bill Belichick's an egomaniac, and there's no doubt about it. But
the idea of
Bob Kraft, of all people, you know, Mr. Down to Earth, Bob Kraft, you know, it's just funny.
Yeah, it really is. All right, so that should wrap it up.
I mean, it's almost like having Dan Snyder come out and do a ethics briefing for everybody, right?
Yeah. Oh, did you, and we didn't cover this, did you see the thing about the Cardinals owners and somebody compared them to Dan Snyder and said, these guys are worse than Dan Snyder?
Is that possible?
Yeah, that's my question.
The only one that can legitimately compare to Snyder would be Donald Sterling in the NBA. Yeah. Donald Sterling was the owner of the LA Clippers. He was a slumlord in LA. And he said all kinds of weird racist things. And Sterling would be worse probably, but Snyder, Bill Bidwell is not worse than Dan Snyder or whatever Bidwell it is now.
And I would maybe also put the owner of the Knicks might be in that conversation too. He's a real jerk.
He's a jerk, but he hasn't done this openly awful things. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
And don't forget about the Carolina owner. Was it Tepper, right?
Tepper is in the minor leagues compared to Snyder right now. He's got a lot of work to do. He's working on it, though.
He's doing pretty well in that process.
Give him some time to get his game up to snuff. Yeah, maybe. Right. We'll get
until we hear, like, you know, attorneys general are going after you. I don't know if you're in the Snyder conversation yet.
That's
true. The hookers on the boat thing was something that Snyder did. You know?
Yes. Yes, it is. Allegedly.
Was it a boat or was it? I can't remember. But anyway, hookers and Dan Snyder is a thing. That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes, it is. Allegedly.
Okay.
Yes, allegedly. You usually do that to me. This is.
I know. You're right. I don't want to get sued. Yes. Allegedly.
All right. I think this show is allegedly over, is what we're going to say. All right, guys, we will be back the day before the draft, and, well, the show will be up on the draft day, so you can listen
we're going to produce on the fly here. The show is going to be released. Alex has forgotten our production meeting last week. The show will be out on Wednesday next week.
But we're going to record on Tuesday, remember?
Are we recording on Tuesday?
Why don't we end this show and we'll talk about it? Okay. There will be another show before the draft. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Later.